KMXT is supported by a grant from North Pacific Fuel, serving and continuing the tradition of excellent service to the community at three locations: Marine Dock at 715 Shelikoff Street, Gas and Go at the Y, and Gas and Go at Mill Bay.
It's nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT. On 100.1 FM, it's your public radio station, broadcasting from rather damp and windy Kodiak, Alaska. Certainly is a lot warmer than it has been, 37 degrees out at the airport right now. Those northeast winds are steady at 26, gusting to 36 right now out at the airport. We're looking for more dampness. Rain is likely tonight before 3 a.m., then snow again. Cloudy skies tonight with a low around 34 and northeast winds 30, turning to the northwest after midnight. For tomorrow night, we're looking for those temperatures to dip back down into the teens, and for those teens to continue for the rest of the week, overnight. Coming up on the Midday Report, a Canadian mine similar to Pebble would be constructed above Southeast Alaska streams, maybe. And an interview with a documentary filmmaker about Alaska and isolation.
Live from NPR News, I'm Lakshmi Singh. President Joe Biden says the new Omicron variant of the coronavirus is a cause for concern, but not cause for panic.
It gives us time. It gives us time to take more actions, to move quicker, to make sure people understand you have to get your vaccine. You have to get the shot. You have to get the booster.
Biden speaking earlier today to the U.S.'s decision to impose certain travel restrictions. He's urging tens of millions of people who are still unvaccinated to get their COVID-19 shots as soon as possible before the Omicron variant is reported in the U.S., which could be a matter of days. He says the travel restrictions in southern Africa, where the variant has spread quickly, buy scientists some time to better learn how dangerous the Omicron variant is and how well current COVID vaccines are likely to hold up. The White House says it's currently in talks with Pfizer and Moderna to adapt their vaccines to fight the new strain if necessary, but that process could take months. The head of the World Health Organization, meanwhile, says the emergence of the new Omicron variant shows the need for more powerful global cooperation on pandemics. NPR's Jason Beaubien reports that WHO is currently considering revamping the current international health regulations.
Speaking at the opening ceremony of a special assembly of the World Health Organization's member states, the Director General of the WHO called for a new legally binding treaty on how to handle international disease outbreaks. Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus said the current global system for containing pandemics isn't working.
Our current system disincentivizes countries from alerting others to threats that will inevitably land on their shores.
Tedros again denounced the vast disparities globally in access to COVID vaccines. He noted that only 1 in 4 health workers in Africa is fully vaccinated and said that no individual country can vaccinate its way out of a pandemic alone. Jason Beaubien, NPR News.
Jack Dorsey is stepping down as CEO of Twitter. NPR's Shannon Bond reports the co-founder will be succeeded by Twitter's chief technology officer.
Jack Dorsey says he believes Twitter is ready to move on from its founders. So he's turning over the helm to technology chief Parag Agrawal, who's a 10-year Twitter veteran. Dorsey is also CEO of the payment company Square. He's come under criticism from some investors and employees who say his attention is divided because he runs two public companies and that Twitter needs the focus of a dedicated CEO. Dorsey survived an attempt by activist shareholders to oust him last year. Twitter has been slow to innovate compared to many of its social media peers, but has recently begun to roll out new features, including subscriptions and audio chat, as part of an ambitious goal to double annual sales and attract more users. Shannon Bond, NPR News.
You're listening to NPR News.
NPR News es presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor, llama al 907-481-2400.
A stalled Canadian mine that critics say could threaten Southeast Alaska salmon has been granted an extension by provincial regulators in Canada. The KSM mine's developers haven't found investors to pay for the project's construction yet, but as Coast Alaska's Drake Resnick reports, the KSM's location about 20 miles from the border has made it controversial for those who would live downstream from the open pit mine.
The Kerr Sulphurets Mitchell promises to be one of the largest open pit mining projects on the continent, but Toronto-based Seabridge Gold, which owns the prospect, has not found an investor to help build the gold, silver, and copper mine known as KSM. British Columbia regulators gave tentative approval for KSM back in 2014 with the caveat that it gets started in the next 5 years. But as that deadline approached, the company applied and received an extension good through 2024. Seabridge came back again last year saying it needed more time. In filings with provincial regulators, it said the COVID-19 pandemic's travel restrictions prevented it from bringing potential investors to the remote site.
COVID did have an impact, without a doubt, on our project. And ultimately, based on our submission, the BC government agreed with that.
That's Seabridge Gold's Brent Murphy. He's referring to the 2-year extension recently granted by the province's environment ministry. Seabridge Gold is what's known in the industry as a junior. It does exploratory work and pitches investors with the hopes of getting a deep-pocketed global firm as a partner with the wherewithal to develop a prospect into an actual mine.
There's still substantial interest in the project, and our ultimate goal is for the project to be joint ventured with a major mining company.
And it's crucial for Seabridge Gold for that to happen before its regulatory approval expires, hence its need for extensions. Canadian mines built in watersheds that extend into the U.S. are controversial in Southeast Alaska, and KSM is no exception. Seabridge Gold says waste from the mine would be stored in a watershed that drains into Canada, but the mine itself would be in the headwaters of the Unik River, which flows out near Ketchikan. Still, Murphy says the company is designing the project to minimize threats to fisheries and other resources.
So essentially, if you look at the report prepared by the BC government and the Canadian government, there is no predicted impacts on Alaskan waters.
Transboundary mine critics in Southeast Alaska complain that BC regulators are allowing the permit to stay active based on an environmental review completed 7 years ago. They think Seabridge should have to redo some of its analysis and go back to the drawing board.
You know, it was kind of a troubling move by Seabridge, I think, to exploit the pandemic a bit here. What's more concerning to us here is that BC let them get away with it.
That's Chris Zimmer. He works with Rivers Without Borders and an environmental watchdog in Juneau, one of a number of groups that says the BC government doesn't do enough to regulate its mining industry.
What I saw here is yet another, you know, part of a kind of a clear and disturbing history of deference to the industry. We saw it at Mount Polley. I mean, just kind of an unwillingness to really, I think, aggressively apply the environmental laws and regulations, but a clear willingness to give the industry every break possible here.
He's referring to the Mount Polley mine disaster. In 2014, a tailings dam in British Columbia failed, allowing millions of tons of liquid waste to escape uncontrolled into a watershed that drains into the Fraser River, which hosts one of Canada's most treasured salmon runs. Imperial Metals, which ran Mount Polley, was never fined or sanctioned.
And we're very aware of the tailings ponds concerns, i.e. Mount Polley and the other unfortunate incidences that happen around the world.
That's Seabridge Gold's Brent Murphy again.
We are taking these concerns very seriously, and there are concerns held by both Canadian and American citizens, and we're working through those, and we're trying to be fully transparent on our design.
BC's environmental officials declined to be interviewed. They referred back to their 27-page report outlining their rationale for granting the 2-year extension. If it is built, KSM would be comparable to Bristol Bay's Pebble Project in its scale, wealth, job creation potential, as well as environmental risk. That's because, like Pebble, it would be an open-pit design. Its mine waste would be held in a massive tailings pond created by a dam more than 780 feet high, taller than the Hoover Dam. But for that to happen, Seabridge Gold will need a major investor before its environmental assessment expires in 2026. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Jacob Resnick.
A Fairbanks police detective has been charged with felony assault. 36-year-old Garrett Butler is accused of assaulting his brother-in-law, 30-year-old Aaron Vogel, during a family gathering at a Harding Lake cabin this past July 5th. According to charging documents, both Butler, who was off duty, and Vogel had been drinking. Butler claims Vogel challenged him to a fight and pushed his sister, after which he took Vogel to the ground and punched him in the face 3 to 5 times. Vogel denies pushing the woman and claims Butler came at him from behind, choked him, and punched him 30 to 40 times. Vogel suffered a fractured eye socket, broken teeth, as well as lacerations and bruises. He was treated at the hospital and charged with misdemeanor assault and disorderly conduct. Trooper spokesperson Tim Despain declined to comment on why over 4 months elapsed before Butler was charged. City of Fairbanks spokesperson Teal Sodern says an administrative investigation was conducted to see if Butler violated any department policies, but the results of that investigation are considered a personnel matter and are not being released. City police took Butler to Fairbanks Correctional Center on Friday. He faces 1 misdemeanor and 2 felony assault charges and has been placed on administrative leave. Documentary filmmaker Ward Serrell says the isolation of Southeast Alaska was a key to getting to know himself during his young adulthood in the 1980s and 90s. He's out with a new memoir called To Crack the World Open, Solitude, Alaska, and a Dog Named Woody. It's the story of a young man's journey to confront uncomfortable truths in rain-soaked Ketchikan, largely alone but for his yellow Labrador retriever, Woody. KRBD's Eric Stone sat down with Serrell earlier this month to discuss the new memoir, starting with what brought him to Alaska in the first place.
I was a 3-piece suited accountant in what I call Boxtown in Seattle, going up, riding elevators up the skyscrapers every day, and completely at a loss of why I was there. It was completely foreign to my nature. And one day, heard one of the partners say the word Alaska, and he was talking about these Alaska Native villages that they had taken on to audit. And I raised my hand and said, you know, give me every one of those. So there I was with my audit bags on the back deck of the Alaska State Ferry, going up to places like Hoona and Kasan and Saxman. And the, you know, gourmet air and water of Alaska just knocked me between the eyeballs. And I, you know, said, I got to figure out a way to stay up here. And I was heading towards something much more integral to who I was. It had a lot to do with nature and wildness than, you know, 3-piece suits riding elevators.
What sort of lessons do you feel like you took from your time in Alaska?
I'd say that the primary lesson I learned from being in Alaska was that being alone for a bit is essential to knowing oneself. You know, that journey to solitude I took was critical to me becoming who I am today, and it took me to the heart of the matter. And so, you know, solitude as part of a larger spiritual arc and practice of one's life. I'd say the other, and I'm going to bring the dog in here, right? The intimacy with and love of a dog can be equal and even greater than that with than it can be with a human. And that sounds like that's a bit, I'll just say that's not an easy thing to talk about. And I think it's actually more people's experience than people will admit, but you can really be who you are with a dog, and there's this complete acceptance there. And the intimacy is so deep because it's wordless and you're communicating through body language or through eyes. And you know it at most when they leave, you realize, if you didn't already, the depth of that intimacy. And then I think that the other thing I learned from Alaska is that healing from one's childhood patterns and traumas is lifelong work.
I did want to talk a little bit about your KRBD show, because I was just, I think that is so awesome. But yeah, tell me a little bit about the show.
Yeah, KRBD was a revelation to me. You know, I walked in and here was a guy named the Teen Angel doing a radio show and told me that, you know, I could take a training class and come in and do my own show. did a rock and roll show with Kate Martini up there called Over the Edge. And one of the features was called Chew the Bone with Dr. Woody, which was, Dr. Woody was a cosmic dog psychologist, and he would answer the letters of problem pets or two-leggeds that live with him. So,
Did you do a voice or something for him? Did I read that right?
Yeah. Dr. Woody would speak like this. Good evening, all you mutts and pretty girls too. This is Dr. Woody.
Well, Ward, thank you so much for your time. This has been a great conversation, and thank you again for the book. Thanks again.
Thanks a lot, man. I guess I can leave you with this. Woof. That was from Woody.
That was Ward Serrell, author of the new memoir, To Crack the World Open, Solitude, Alaska, and a Dog Named Woody. It's available wherever books are sold. There's also a companion podcast called Chew the Bone with Dr. Woody, available wherever you get your podcasts. A Fairbanks company hopes to build wind farms northwest of town. Alaska Renewables is seeking to lease as many as 2,700 acres of state land in the Shovel Creek area west of Murphy Dome to site wind turbines to feed the Golden Valley Electric Association's grid.
Our focus is on directly benefiting the Fairbanks residents, first through their wallets with more affordable energy, and second with improved health and reduced emissions and better air quality.
Alaska Renewables Vice President Andrew McDonnell stresses that the privately financed wind project is in its very early stages.
There are obviously a whole host of complexities and factors that need to be considered in the coming months and years. However, we estimate that our project could help decarbonize GVA's grid by as much as 30% without increasing electricity costs to its members.
McDonald says applying to lease land from the Department of Natural Resources is just a first step.
Going through DNR's established leasing process, which includes community engagement and feedback.
The Alaska Renewables Wind Farm was one of 8 alternative energy projects submitted to Golden Valley Electric Association last spring in response to a GVEA request for information on wind, solar, hydro, and battery projects. Last month, GVEA announced that none of what it categorizes as small-scale projects met with its emissions reduction, reliability, and cost savings requirements.
We received feedback from them regarding our project proposal, and so we're working to collaborate with them and find pathways that we might be able to move forward with the project in the future.
GVEA spokesperson Meadow Bailey confirms that the utility is talking with Alaska Renewables as well as other alternative energy developers and is committed to working with independent power producers, the Alaska Energy Authority, and other railroad belt utilities on potential large-scale renewable projects. Anchorage may have to pay more money in interest on its bonds after a major agency lowered the city's credit rating. S&P Global Ratings dropped Anchorage's rating from AAA to AA+ on Tuesday, citing a decline in the city's available funds during recovery from the 2018 earthquake and the coronavirus pandemic. The S&P report also cites high construction labor costs. Lower credit ratings mean the city will have to pay more on its debts, but Nolan Kluda, an economist with the University of Alaska Anchorage, says it's hard to say exactly by how much.
The difference between, you know, a AAA rating and a AA+ rating as far as how much you would pay in interest is likely to be pretty small in the scheme of things. Probably not something that taxpayers would notice.
The report notes that the city could improve its rating if it recoups some of its earthquake-related spending that is covered by FEMA, but it warns that a trend of gradual population decline could reduce the tax base. It also says the risk to the city from future earthquakes and climate change affected its rating.
KMXT Local News is underwritten in part by
GCI. GCI has adjusted store hours across the state to keep our customers and employees as safe as possible during this time. The most up-to-date store hours are available on GCI.com.
This is Alaska Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. Is an electric boat right for your marine business? There's an easy way to find out. More after this.
This radio is brought to you by Alaska Boats and Permits in Homer, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs, online at alaskaboat.com.
No engine noise, no fuel slicks or emissions. Would an electric boat be suitable for your business? Newer battery banks and hybrid options make it ideal for several uses.
We're more focused on low-speed vessels. Vessels that know where they're going to go every day and pretty much do the same routine. Some of the uses, you know, would be harbor port operations, tourism, recreation, or rental. And then, of course, fishing, especially mariculture. And, you know, trawlers plugging along at 2 to 3 knots.
Bob Varnas of Juneau runs Tongass Rain Electric Cruise LLC and has been doing gas to all electric or hybrid boat conversions since 2014. Now he's partnered with builders and suppliers to bring more vessels to Alaska.
And now we're pursuing identifying ideal areas of operation and then introducing electric boat alternatives to those operators.
It's newer and smaller high-energy lithium-ion batteries that make it possible. Studies show they can reduce vessel operating expenses by 75%. Electric boats also are submarine silent, Varnas says. That could remove the boat sound signatures that attract whales to longline hooks loaded with black cod.
Between an electric motor and some nice black cod traps, the whales wouldn't even know you're coming.
There is one hybrid diesel-electric fishing boat in Alaska, the Sunbeam, owned by Fabian Gruder of Sitka. Washington State also is converting its three largest ferries to hybrid drives to reduce greenhouse gas outputs. Varnas and his team aim to bring the earth-friendly option to more Alaska mariners.
I know it can be confusing and people may not know where to go, and that's our purpose, is to help and facilitate with those transitions.
Fish Radio is also brought to you by OBI Seafoods. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Monday. It is the 29th day of November, the year 2021. The sun rose today at 9:25. It will set again at 4:30. That will give us 7 hours and 5 minutes of daylight, a loss of 3 minutes and 1 second compared to yesterday. The record high for this date was 52. That was set in 2019. And the record low is 3 degrees, set in 1971. Currently 37 degrees out at the airport, 36 here at the station. And they're looking for all rain this afternoon after 1 p.m., they're still calling for areas of blowing snow. High near 37, we certainly have reached that. East wind 35 miles per hour should decrease to 25 miles per hour this afternoon, but could gust as high as 45 miles per hour. And we're looking to maybe get more snow. Rain tonight before 4 a.m., then snow after that, low around 34 tonight. Northeast wind to 20, turning to the northeast, becoming northeast 30. Chance of precipitation is 80% tonight, but little or no snow accumulation is expected for tonight. For tomorrow, snow is likely before 10 a.m., then scattered snow showers between 10 and 4 p.m., then just a chance of snow after that. Mostly cloudy skies with a high near 34 tomorrow and northwest winds to 20. And for Tuesday night, snow is likely mainly between 10 p.m. and 4 a.m., and we're looking for a low around 18 on Tuesday night and lows in the teens for the rest of the week. Looking at our local tides, we have a low tide coming up at 3:58 p.m. on the east side of 2.3 feet, followed by a high tide at 9:51 this evening of 6.6 feet. Our low tide for the early morning hours will be at 3:47 a.m. and be 1.6 feet, and our high tide for tomorrow morning here on the east side will be at 10:22 a.m. and be 8.6 feet. Over on the west side, you have a low tide coming up at 4:42 p.m. That will be a 3-foot tide, followed by a high tide at 10:27 p.m. of 11.1 feet. Your low tide for the early morning hours will be at 4:37 a.m. and be 2.5 feet in Larsen Bay, followed by a high tide at 10:54 tomorrow morning of 14.1 feet. Mariners, we do have some weather in store for you with a storm warning today for the Shelikof Strait with a heavy freezing spray warning as well. Northeast 50 today in the Shelikof with seas to 22 feet and heavy freezing spray. That heavy freezing spray should diminish a bit this afternoon. For tonight, northeast 40 becoming north 30 after midnight, seas to 19 feet, should subside to 12 feet after midnight with freezing spray. And for tomorrow, north 25, seas to 7 feet and freezing spray in the Shelikof. For Marmot Island to Sitkanat, Kodiak's east side offshore, gale warning today and a heavy freezing spray warning for today as well. Southeast 40 becoming east 30 this afternoon, seas to 15 feet. Heavy freezing spray along the coast should slack off this afternoon. For tonight, northeast 25, seas to 19 feet with rain. And for tomorrow, west 25, seas coming down to 15 feet. The Kiwanis tree sales are going on. They kicked off last weekend. They're happening Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays. On Fridays, it goes on between 4 p.m. and 7 p.m. Saturdays starts in the morning, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., and Sundays starts at 12 noon and goes to 4 p.m. And they have three varieties of trees, as well as wreaths and mantelpieces, and you can also buy cedar garland by the foot. That's scheduled to end December 12th. This is a great time to bring your friends and family to the Aleutic Museum for this holiday season to enjoy their exhibits, as Matson has generously sponsored free admission for all of Kodiak between November 23rd and December 23rd. Everyone is welcome. They are open Tuesday through Saturday from noon to 4 p.m. at 215 Mission Road. The Senior Center needs paper bags again. You can give them a call at 486-6181. They'd be happy to meet you at either the front or back door and take those extra bags off your hands. Well, the City of Kodiak Public Works Department wants to remind you that when the temperatures do go down into the teens, you should keep your water running from a faucet to prevent your pipes from freezing. The library's next virtual trivia game is tonight. That's happening at 6:30 p.m. The Zoom link can be found on the library's homepage. Everyone is welcome to join this humorous way to spend a Monday night. And again, go to the library's homepage and find the Zoom link. Also, as the holidays approach, teens are invited to come make holiday gifts at the library. Treat yourself and loved ones to a sugar scrub, ornaments, or personalized jewelry. DIY stations will be set up 3 to 6 p.m. on weekdays through December 23rd. The library will also be holding two holiday crafts sessions on Saturdays through December 18th and December 18th. Saturday, December 4th at 10:30 a.m., the morning craft will be hurricane lanterns. The afternoon craft at 2 p.m. will be decorating gnomes. Please call them at 486-8686 to sign up. But again, that's happening Saturdays, and the morning one is at 10:30. The afternoon one's at 2 p.m. Senior Citizens of Kodiak will be having their Board of Directors meeting tomorrow. That's happening at 1 p.m. in the Senior Center. The meeting is open to the public and masks are required. For more information, call the Senior Center at 486-6181. A global Christmas will be happening right here on KMXT. That's going on December 15th. What it is the chance to sing. Go to the Kodiak Island Borough School District website and you can find song lists and lyrics. And then December 15th, starting at 7 p.m., tune in to KMXT and sing along from your living room, front porch, or anywhere you want. Gather the whole family and raise your voice in song. Again, that's happening December 15th, 7 p.m. Tune in to KMXT and find your song list and lyrics at the Kodiak Island Borough School District website.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 2 times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. and during the midday report at 12:20. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.